Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning. I'm Celeste Headley here with John Hockenberry. Todd Zwillick. John Hockenberry's away for the holidays.
Is there that much cynicism in the room that you think you're with John?
It's habit. It's pure habit. Coming up, we're going to talk about work life. We do every Tuesday. And we're wondering, it's almost like a Liberty Mutual question. What would you do to get a job? Would you whiten your resume? And I'm not talking about using brighter paper either. We're
going to
talk about this in a few minutes. First, here's a check on leading stories at 47 minutes after the hour. The high number of people collecting unemployment checks are draining state funds. That's according to a report in the Washington Post this morning. According to federal projections, the shortfall in state funds means that 40 state programs will go broke within 2 years. President Obama sits down with representatives of a dozen small banks at the White House this morning. They'll discuss lending to small businesses and financial regulation. The session is a follow-up to a similar meeting the president held last week with some of the nation's big banks.
Yahoo is shutting down its offices except for essential functions from Christmas Day through New Year's. The move is a way for the internet company to cut costs. Some economic numbers are due out later this morning. The Commerce Department releases third quarter GDP numbers at 8:30. And then at 10 a.m., the National Association of Realtors comes out with its home sales figures for November. Right now, we have Peter Morici on the line, economist and business professor at the University of Maryland and friend of The Takeaway, of course. He's with us to give us a look at what we're expecting this morning from the numbers. Peter, good morning. What are you watching for in the GDP? What are you expecting this morning?
Well, it came in at 2.8% in the preliminary estimate, and if we just stay there, we'll be happy. The biggest story is, where do we go from here? A lot of economists are expecting the fourth quarter would be a little bit better. Most economists are expecting a couple of good quarters of growth, and then the stimulus money wears off, and we'll see what goes from there. But 2.8%.
So 2.8% this morning, and then do we watch news reports for the next 24 hours that the recession is over?
The recession is technically over, I'm almost certain. However, if you're one of the 7 million people that lost their job, it hardly feels that way.
Right.
It's very silly to get involved in that discussion. That is like, how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin?
And what about home sales? What are we expecting?
Well, we're expecting something over a little bit over 6 million. We're going to get an easing back, perhaps, from the October number. This is a November figure we're getting, simply because the October number was so strong. These numbers have been juiced by the fact that Ben Bernanke has been keeping long-term mortgage rates below 5%, and that's starting to go away. Again, economists are getting concerned that the housing market recovery will slow down, that the increase in prices we're seeing, however modest they may be, will slow, and that this is about as good as housing sales is going to get for a while.
And we have to keep our eye on foreclosures. Peter Morici, economist and business professor at the University of Maryland, thanks for joining us. Those are some of the stories we're following this morning.
Time to talk about work on the weekdays, and that means lack of it oftentimes. Unemployment at 10%, many more workers trying to find jobs. And in some cases, that's made people take what might seem like drastic measures. Many workers have had to, quote, whiten their resumes to get themselves to land a job, basically. This is for employers for whom race is still an issue. John Hockenberry and I sat down with Chaz Kaiser. He's the author of the book Embracing the Real World, The Black Woman's Guide to Life After College. And we talked to Chaz about whether she thinks this subtle discrimination is indeed still a big issue.
Oh, it definitely is. And more reports, more studies are coming out showing that racial discrimination is still a factor, but there's different ways that people are discriminating against people based on their race, including their names and the type of hairstyles that they have. Ethnic names, ethnic hairstyles.
Well, ethnic sounding name. I'm John Hockenberry. I guess that is ethnic in the sense that it's
that
obviously white.
Right, obviously white.
Obviously
and so
white.
What's happened? you would be called to have a white-sounding name. There are studies that have shown that people with quote-unquote white-sounding names, i.e. John, Brad, and Carrie, are 50% more likely to get called back in for an interview than people with a quote-unquote black-sounding name,
there's,
i.e. Keisha,
there's
Jamal.
The number. Or Tuare Murray, who joins us from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Good morning, Tuare.
Good morning.
So you actually had to make a decision based on the ethnic sound of your name to get a job. Explain how you made the calculation.
Well, my name was Tuare Ajanaku, and for me, it really became a matter of survival. I'm a certified medical technologist. I have a BS in chemistry, and I was working actually at a very, very small privately owned laboratory doing health screenings, very underemployed. Prior to that, well, I spent almost a year applying for numerous positions with hospitals and major lab companies. Impressive resume, but I got very little feedback or interest in my resume.
And the difference between a Kanju and Murray was really the difference.
I just made the decision to give myself every possible chance, and I legally changed my last name to Murray.
And you are employed now, right?
I am.
Well, first of all, congratulations to you. But if the reason that Tuari Murray is employed is because she had to change her name, Chas Kaiser, how do you distinguish between the statistical basis for having to make these kinds of changes, to so-called whiten your resume, and just the fear, just purely the fear?
Well, you can't, and that's what makes it so hard. But that's the same thing, you know, for sex or race. You go into an interview, and you really don't know if you're going to be discriminated against because you're a woman or because you're black or because you're a foreigner. You just fear that you may be.
You know, this is an interesting issue because, Charles, I'm in a wheelchair, right? And I've never actually had an issue of discrimination in my employment. And when I was working for NBC, we did this story on discrimination on the basis of disability. And I said to them, but you never really know. How are you going to figure this out? But the producer said to me, no, here's how we're going to know. We're going to send somebody in, first of all, in a wheelchair, and then we're going to send somebody in not in a wheelchair, and you'll be able to see the discrimination when the person not in the chair gets the job. And I said, oh, right. And it was unbelievable, the amount of discrimination you saw.
And as the study showed, I mean, you have people with white-sounding names 50% more likely to get called back in for an interview. And this is even when people with the black-sounding names had better credentials. So, I mean, there's hard evidence there. As far as for example, the hair, there haven't been any exact studies done on hair. But black people will tell you when they take away their locks, when they take away their braids, people treat them differently. People look at them differently. It's like people look at them like they're more professional because their hair is straighter.
You know,
and so it's really a matter of perception.
Mm-hmm. Chas, this is a question for you or Tuare. Many people look at the statistics about the underemployment of African Americans, especially, and African American men in particular. And oftentimes they think, well, African Americans tend to live in urban areas. Maybe they tend to have disadvantages in terms of education. And they think these are the problems. And I have to wonder, are there these same kind of trends for other minority groups? Do Hispanics see that they have to change their name? We get lots and lots of doctors from, say, India. Do they have to change their name?
Well, actually, yes. Well, there's been studies to show that people with foreign names are also less likely to get hired.
Tuare Murray, any advice for people who are looking at their resume, dusting it off in this moment of 10% unemployment?
I honestly believe that the interest that I got in my resume after I changed my name, and it was significantly more, I think it had to do with my name first. Just trying to get in the door, and then, you know, the rest is on you, of course, at the interview to, you know, kind of make or break the deal. But, you know, for me, it became a matter of, I think, just getting in the door, just having my resume not stuck to the bottom and at least being considered seriously.
Tuare, I have to ask you, because I know my African-American friends, and I know what their response would be to this. What did they say to you when you changed your name? Did they think that you were selling out?
Honestly, I didn't tell a lot of people at first because I personally felt that way myself, but I also know I have two children. I'm a single mom. I know it's tough out here. I'm unemployed. That's scary enough. And I just really felt like I had to do what I had to do. You know, I got a few sneers and jeers, you know, and a couple of comments, but it was quite intense sometimes, yes. Mm.
Yeah. Well, intense sneers and jeers and losing a paycheck, that can be pretty intense as well.
Yeah.
I definitely feel your pain there. Tuare Murray, who had to make the decision to change her name as a way of dealing with the very competitive job market in the middle of this recession, joining us from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Thanks so much, Tuare.
Oh, you're welcome.
And Chas Kaiser is author of the book Embracing the Real World, The Black Woman's Guide to Life After College. Thanks so much, Chas.
Thank you.
John Hockenberry and I spoke with both of them last week.
So if you want to re-listen to that or anything else on the show, take our podcast to go. Subscribe now at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes. And all this week, we're remixing holiday music to give it a new spin. But you might harbor a secret joy for a carol or two yourself. So tell us, what's your guilty pleasure holiday song? And, of course, bonus points if you sing it for us. That's what we really want to hear. Reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Send us your email to mytake@thetakeaway.org.
Mine is Christmas in Killarney.
Yeah, but you're
That's
a great singer.
That's my guilty pleasure. Don't forget to tune into The Takeaway on Friday for our Christmas Day special. It is going to be so cool. We are bringing you Christmas from 1941. We're dipping into the Sound Ives archives. We have this incredible tape from just weeks after Pearl Harbor, just as the United States was getting into World War II. Join us to hear sports, movies, music, everything from Christmas 1941. That's on Friday. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.